And a call meeting to order, the Early Childhood Policy and Finance Committee meeting. Thank you all for coming, and welcome to our bonding hearing. As you know, session starts February 4th, so that's when we officially start, but we are having these early hearings on the different bonding facilities so that we can move them the first week of session. With that, we are going to hear House File 2482, Representative Rukovina, and then we will have House File 2458, which is more sort of the omnibus early childhood learning bonding proposal. Well, Representative Rukovina, welcome to the committee. I think it's your first time before our committee, right?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, it is. And like you, I have 2 days of hearings since I have all the higher ed, which are most of the bonding bills, and then all the deed projects. So if you want some of my bills, maybe I should give them to you.
I've got
2 full days of hearings coming up on the 26th and 27th, I believe.
Well, of course, that is the bulk of the bonding is a lot of the higher ed facilities. But I thought the first time before you came before a committee, you were supposed to bring treats.
I did. I brought the superintendent of Virginia School. So,
well, welcome.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. And I'm not going to speak long other than to tell you that this project, which is a joint project between the Virginia School District and our local CAF agency, Community Action Agency, and their Head Start program, I think is a very innovative one. And I think, Madam Chair, that you're well aware of it. And I know that we had looked at it on a bonding tour. I've been to where the folks that go through Head Start for their early childhood program are located, and it's pretty dismal. It's in the basement of the old high school where I went to high school, which is now, I think, the 4th through 6. And it's sad. They're down in the basement playing in the hallway on, what little equipment they have there. So this project is to co-locate all those different spaces that are now located over a different area. And you'll hear some interesting facts and figures. I have with me Chuck Footer of the doesn't have an itch or a vowel on the end of it. It's hard to pronounce names for me that don't. He's the superintendent of schools, our new superintendent that's been there about a year. Mike Krebsbach, who's father was a former superintendent, and I was a new member of the school board at 22 years old when his dad came on at the time. Boy, that's 30-some years ago, isn't it, Mike? Anywhere, maybe 40. Anyway, he's the principal at the Virginia K-12 system, and Skip Ferris from our CAP agency is here, who's, I think Skip is kind of like the lead on this project, along with Robin Licari, who will be coming up, all of them. And Madam Chair, if it's your preference, that's all I'm going to say about it. And if you want all the other two folks to come up so they can do the project, is that
what sure, that sounds great.
And I'll sit in the background and get out of their way, and we'll present it, what I think is a very innovative and much-needed program for that area.
Great. Thank you. And welcome to the committee. If you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, my name is Chuck Footer, and I've been the superintendent of the Virginia Schools for just over a little over 6 months. And this early childhood and family education project is one of the reasons I chose to move to Virginia. I was very excited about the idea of incorporating all the community programs designed to help young children and families into one location. Common sense and research tell us that successfully educate children, we need to get them off to a good start. And by partnering with their parents and all available community and regional resources, this can happen for children of all cultures, races, and socioeconomic levels. The years of work and the broad base of area-wide involvement that went into this proposal is impressive. We hope you will agree and be willing to partner with us and improve education for the children of Virginia and the neighboring communities of Gilbert, Eveleth, Mountain Iron, and surrounding areas. It's my pleasure to introduce 4 individuals that represent over 50 active participants that work directly on this project, and hundreds of participants, people that participated through surveys. Mike Krebsbach is elementary principal at K3 Parkview Learning Center, Mike works with young children and their families every day, and we plan to make Parkview the center for early childhood and family education in our region. Robin Licari is our early childhood family education and school readiness coordinator, as well as a skilled and caring hands-on provider of services to young children and their families. Paul Cerkvenik is also with us today, and Paul is right there. Paul is a Virginia School Board member. He's been very involved since the very beginning of this initiative and represents the full support of our school board and the support they've given all of us on this project. And Skip Ferris is the director of Arrowhead Head Start. He's an enthusiastic advocate for early childhood and family education and school readiness, and he's a very willing spokesperson for our region-wide project, and Mr. Ferris will continue if you'll mind.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. My name is Skip Ferris. I am the director of Arrowhead Head Start. I've been the director for 6 years, but I'm also proud to say that I am a member of the Virginia Early Childhood Task Force that has been working on this project. A little over 4 years ago, this task force was put together and it was made up of a cross-section of our community. We got together in regular working sessions over the last 4 years to determine if there was a need and support for expanding early childhood programs and education in the Quad Cities area, specifically in Virginia. Members of the task force included parents, early childhood education providers, school board members, social services, mental health, the business, public health, and the YMCA, along with others. The task force determined that there is a strong support in our community for a pre-K system and established a subcommittee to outline a business plan that would prepare every child to be educationally, socially, and emotionally prepared for kindergarten. I also serve as one of the co-chairs of the Access and Finance Committee to the Governor's Early Childhood Advisory Council, and that council also has similar goals to ours, and that is preparing every child for kindergarten by the year 2020. Our plan that we have developed is based on Yale University's School of the 21st Century model. The overall themes of our project is to integrate school services, increase the capacity of parents, child care providers, and the school in preparing our youngest children for learning success. Our focus is on developing this early childhood hub, if you will, co-located at the Virginia School District's pre-K to 3 program, which is known as the Parkview School. Following Yale University's School of the 21st Century model, we plan to implement a year-round multi-service center providing high-quality, accessible services from early morning to early evening. Evidence-based models and practices will be used in our approach. Some of the components of our project include providing full-day services to ease multiple transitions of children, on-site child care for wraparound services, coordinated outreach to families with young children, and incorporating Head Start's comprehensive health and dental services and developmental screening for all preschool children. In fact, the task force has accepted the Head Start performance standards as the guide for all children in our preschool program. Our task force also recommends that all the early childhood classrooms be located at the Parkview School. Currently, at the Parkview School, early childhood family education, early childhood special education, and school readiness programs are located at that facility. Head Start, however, is located in the Roosevelt School, which is a 4-6 school, and as Representative Rukavina said, it is in the basement, and our indoor play space is a hallway that's dimly lit and very noisy due to the heating system and air system that's in that area. The outdoor play space is also not appropriate for our children. While we do have an infant and toddler center in the Roosevelt School, we do have a toddler playground that we have established there that's appropriate, but we don't have an appropriate 3- and 4-year-old playground at that facility, so the kids have nothing outside to play on that's allowable by Head Start performance standards. Moving Head Start to the Parkview School would afford all the children an appropriate learning environment, would help with coordination of services, and this will certainly be easily recognized as our hub for early childhood services. In order to have all of the early childhood classrooms in the Parkview School, this does require additional classrooms to be built. Our bonding request, if approved, will allow us to add these necessary classrooms. We will incorporate an age-appropriate indoor large muscle space and outdoor play spaces that are age-appropriate for all children. Construction of this facility will create many construction jobs. We'll also include the youth build program in our construction project. Once completed, an additional 12 to 14 early childhood positions will be created. While our request for this is construction of classrooms, it's really much more than that. It's really an investment into the children and the families and the community in our area. And with that, I'm going to turn it over now to Mr. Presbach.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Mike Krebsbach. I'm the principal of the Parkview Learning Center, Virginia, Minnesota. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am going to be explaining or reviewing our six program components in a little more detail, and these are the basis of our plan. First, and our most important component, is to reach out to new families and to families that are new to our district, specifically targeting our underserved populations, many of which are of a lower socioeconomic capacity. Our second component is to expand preschool opportunities by combining our Head Start, learning readiness, early childhood family education, early childhood special education, and bringing them to a single location with the rest of our kindergarten through third grade students. This expansion not only includes an increase in the physical space, but also a common curriculum delivered in a consistent 4 hour per day, 4 day per week program. We are also planning to extend and expand our after school child care program and provide families with increased transportation options for getting their preschool children to and from school. Our third program component is to expand our health care services, focusing on prevention with a comprehensive health and child developmental screening program, along with on-site preventative dental health services. Our fourth component is a family support and family involvement component. It specifically looks at parent education and parenting skills training for our young and or very inexperienced parents. Our fifth component is to develop a school-age program, including summer child care, a summer lunch program, and a summer educational enrichment program for all of the students, grades K-3 at the Parkview Learning Center. Finally, our sixth component is to improve collaboration with our local child care providers and other informal caregivers, such as grandparents, and we are developing a lending library. We're developing a mentoring program for caregivers, and we're offering support to our local professional daycare providers. We feel that by combining all of these components in a new state-of-the-art facility, we will help our pre-kindergarten children get ready for K, we will leave no child behind, and ultimately we will better prepare our children to compete in the global economy of the 21st century. And thank you, and I will turn it over to Robin.
Great. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could announce your name for the testimony and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Robin Licari, and I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, and all of the other members and audience. I'm going to kind of, I get the privilege and the pleasure of wrapping up after all the gentlemen and kind of sharing some of the odds and ends that weren't touched upon. One of the things that I do want to point out that I think has been clear here is that there's been some unintentional segregation of the early childhood programs in our community because none of the current facilities have enough space for all of the programs to cohabit. We end up with them being across town with providers dashing back and forth. The Head Start lower income children don't have the advantage of as much school readiness, preparation, and transitioning because they're not in the same facility. So we're hoping to break down that barrier. The second piece that this early childhood hub would definitely benefit is the idea that right now we've got the CAP funds and we've got the the federal state pools for Head Start. We have the ECFE fund pool. We have the special ed fund pool, the school readiness fund pool. All these little funding silos are out there. Our goal is to break down some of those barriers, get us all on the same page, and what one program, for example, Head Start with their standards do well, the other programs will loop into. If there's an aspect that, for example, Family Ed does well, the other programs can benefit from that, so we'll build off of each other's strengths. The other piece that became very apparent was that through this process of planning and getting the input from the community at large, we realized there were some projects that we could begin implementing even before building was to take place. And so we've started some of those things over the last 2 or 3 years. We've started things like Head Start. Today, in fact, one of the Head Start classrooms is being bused by the Virginia Public Schools from the grade 4 to 6 facility over to our pre-K to 3 school building. They're going through the lunch line. They're in the gym. You wouldn't believe how much they love a real gym after having large muscle time in a hallway. That's their highlight. We actually had to change the format of our transition day for the Head Start children so that every time they're in the building, they get gym time because it was just their highlight. So in any case, that's happening today. Tonight, one of the aspects that we've begun implementing is expanding the speaker nights and parent ed opportunities. So tonight, you could come up to Virginia, Minnesota and attend a baby sign language class. Monday evening, you could come up and we would let you meet with a certified pet trainer and learn about teaching children respect for animals. And so that's an important aspect that we've incorporated. In May, everybody sits together that has any contact with young kids and we work on transitioning the children to the kindergarten. Who enrolled their children? Who hasn't enrolled the children? Who needs a home visit to get their child enrolled in kindergarten? Whose health records are in good shape? Who needs some more dental care? We sit down as a team so that when they hit the door in September, they're ready to go. They've got all of their needs met. So that's a real important aspect. We also have been expanding our outreach. You heard them talk about working with daycare providers and some of the other folks. But one of the things that is brand new to us, and I feel some shame that we haven't reached out to these folks before, but this school year we're reaching out more to grandparents who are raising their children. Some of you may be familiar with the ROC program, Raising Our Children's Kids. We are intentionally inviting them to every speaker family opportunity that comes across our plate. A second group that we're really working on are the family, friends, and neighbor network, those informal providers who really need services. We're trying to seek them out and include them and invite them to support and undergird, because we're finding some of those children are the ones that miss out on opportunities. A real big process that we started this November, which was a big deal to us, is we wanted to try a little pilot program. Head Start had a huge waiting list this year, as did we at School Readiness. And so what we did is we set up a Friday-only, one full school day of School Readiness. We allow the children to ride the school bus into the center with a bus buddy. They receive before-school care and breakfast in the cafeteria. Then they go through the full school readiness day, and at the end of the day, for example, little Jacob's third-grade sister pops into the classroom, picks up Jacob, takes him into the library for the after-school program, and then when their bus to rural Embarrass, 20 miles away, drives up, she helps her brother get on the bus, and they head home. This is a family that without that option of a full-day program, the child would not be able to participate. We have another mother that will be coming on Friday with her little guy, and she was one of those families that didn't know about the early childhood opportunities in the community. And by the time she realized what she was missing out on, Head Start was full, school readiness was full, and we had a waiting list of 15 children. And that was part of why we started this Friday program. What Amanda does is she picks up the mass transit in Virginia, she rides it to the school building, she drops off her son, she gets back on the bus, goes back home, and then at the end of the school day comes back. What we're hoping to do, oh, and by the way, we do reimburse her for her bus fare. We buy her a bus pass, and we're allowed to do that with our funds. One of our hopes is that with the early childhood hub, we'd be able to take some of the monies that we're using for fragmented transportation and actually put in some preschool bus routes in our community, where people at the low-income housing center would have a bus pull up, kids would get on the bus and come straight to this school. So we're doing some really awesome things, but without the building and getting us all together, there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of back and forth, my calling Skip, do you have room? A family just came across my desk, or him calling me saying, we've got a family, we can't squeeze in. If you're in the same building, there's a better sense of that, and that's what we're hoping for. I do want to thank you very much for this opportunity. As you've heard, we have developed a very comprehensive plan. We've involved a lot of partners. We're doing the extended day in the morning and in the evenings. We're hoping to expand to year-round programming, summer lunch for children, large muscle space that could be utilized by everyone in the Quad Cities communities. We expect to be able to just really impact parents with this exciting project. Thank you for your time.
Great. Well, thank you. Well, very impressive. And I think all the learning we do here in early childhood, the things you want to do are all the right things. And it sounds like it would be a wonderful facility. Representative Rugavina knows I drive through Virginia every summer on my way to Ely.
Oh, great.
Yes. And so I know it's quite the drive for one. So thank you for being here. And thank you for what you do in early ed. Members, I want to ask if there's any questions. The members of our committee came in special today. We're not in session yet, so we appreciate you coming in. We've been to Malacca and to Bloomington for special hearings during the interim, and Representative Peterson's been working on the Early Childhood Caucus, so we've had a lot of things happening, but it's the first time we're starting to get back together here at the Capitol. Any questions, members, and Representative Biskins, and then Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably to Superintendent Futterer. Superintendent, is the $4,022,000 the total cost of the project, or is there a local match that this is a percentage of the project?
The
Superintendent?
So the amount is the total cost of the project, and we hope to provide a local match also.
Okay. Thank you. That's fair.
Representative Biskins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I want to echo your comments to the testifiers. I think they did a good job of telling a compelling story, and the strong advocates, and that's good. All right? You are for your children, and that's appreciated. However, Madam Chair, to you, I'm sure that probably hundreds of school districts throughout the state could provide maybe not as high quality a presentation, but at least as strongly advocate for their own projects and schools. Madam Chair, do we have a set of criteria whereby we are going to make recommendations out of this committee when it comes to capital projects?
Well, Representative Biskins, we've been thinking about that. I mean, we really have this bill and our overall bill, which is a grant program for facilities like this, but on a not as high of a basis. And so the thought is, because there's two bills, the ranking of them would likely be the overall committee bill, and this bill would be second.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the criteria, I think, you know, we've passed the overall bonding committee grant program twice, through the legislature all the way to the governor. It's been vetoed. We'd like to get that passed first. And that has a specific set of criteria. It's like an RFP process where they have to apply to the Department of Human Services. And then this program would go in as our second recommendation and have to compete with the remainder of the bonding proposals.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that. But in the bigger picture, There's a chance that even after the 2010 election, Madam Chair, you'll be holding the gavel once again for this committee. And in so doing, if this project were to be funded, I would at that point probably believe that we would be swamped with requests, and then there's going to have to be some kind of ranking as to where we move with these. So I would encourage the chair to consider how we would rank that so as to make an objective determination in the future, not just based on how many requests came at any given time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wondered how many other communities, I think you talked about Embarrass as being one of the communities. Are there other communities? How wide an area would this preschool hub take in? I mean, how wide an area would they service in terms of all of the things that you've enumerated in this proposal?
Who would like to answer that?
Maybe I can answer the whole question here for you. Well, first of all, this facility is planned for the city of Virginia, right, in the school there. So primarily most of the children that will be going to school there will be in Virginia on that. But when we're looking at this overall hub of early childhood, and we're including our family, friends, and neighbors, we're including parents, we're including other child care providers in the community, it extends into what we call the Quad Cities area, which is Eveleth, Gilbert, Mountain Iron, and also all the way up to Babbitt and Embarrass at times, and Tower for some of those kids on there. So it's really going to be, the classrooms will primarily be for the Virginia children in there, but the entire facility, because we'll have the indoor large muscle play space, and as the hub of early childhood in the Quad Cities area, it will be actually available to all people within the four communities up there.
May I also please comment and add to Skip's testimony? When he speaks of the Virginia does encompass many communities and townships. It goes all the way north through Britt up to a boundary that it matches near Crook. There is a community called Angora. We have children from Angora that are enrolled. We go all the way up toward Ely as far as almost Tower that we're picking up children. We go through Embarrass. We have children from as far away as Aurora or White Lakes or Buell, Eveleth Gilbert, that choose to come because they know that that's where they're going to be going to K-plus, and they want to be able to participate. So that is part of what's going on.
If you can, we go through the chair in the legislature, so if you go through the chair
I apologize.
Back and forth, that would be appreciated. And I think Representative Peterson is a follow-up.
Just a follow-up, Madam Chair. I also wanted to know then, how do you pay for the transportation? Is that out of the K-12 budget? Do they help subsidize that? Because the transportation on getting to all of those places, at least for outreach, can get pretty expensive.
Madam Chair, the way that we finance the transportation is it is a significant chunk of our school readiness budget. We recognize that transportation is the major barrier to families on the Iron Range. With as you pointed out, the broad geographical area that we cover, it is vital that families do participate. I just found out the other day that a family that has been very sporadically attending had a car accident over Christmas. They're a very low-income family. They don't have a functioning vehicle. So I contacted mother and told her that we would be able to pick up transportation for them. So that is something that we plan for and we budget for. If families are able to help defray the cost of transportation, we welcome that, but that is by no means a criteria of whether or not they receive transportation.
Madam Chair, if I might add, through the Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency, which is the grantee for the Head Start program, we also have Arrowhead Transit, which is a public rural transportation provider. They are actually the provider of transportation for our Head Start children right now. We contract services with them. We've also been talking to them about this project and having them become involved as a rural transportation provider and a public transportation provider on getting these kids in. We still have details to work out, but they're very interested in that. But they do the Head Start transportation now for all kids.
Now, weren't there ERA funds for Head Start significant both for early Head Start and potentially facilities improvement? And were you able to apply or access any of those funds?
We, yes. To your question, were ERA funds available. We did access some of those funds in our program. We are an early childhood expansion grantee, one of eight in the state, but we did not have any building funds that were put into that particular grant application. Our Head Start program covers all of St. Louis County except for the city of Duluth, Lake, and Cook counties. So we've taken those funds and kind of spread them over mostly St. Louis County. That's our biggest population.
Can I ask how much money it was?
It was over the two-year period, it was a little over $700,000, and we'll be serving an additional 32 children, infants, and toddlers in our Early Head Start program. We are a federal Early Head Start grantee as well, so that we'll have 82 children and their families served by Early Head Start.
Thank you.
One more comment to the transportation issue. Our Virginia schools, through open enrollment, we go all the way to Tower. We go to Aurora, Hoyt Lakes. You know, we go to Buell. We make a circuit with our school buses. And as Robin mentioned, with our wraparound care, we would potentially offer transportation on a regular school bus, and then we would have that after-school care for the kids to stay in school until the end of the school day, if that was appropriate, or later if parents came to get their kids. So we do have school transportation that's already going to almost all of those locations, so our bus routes do cover the transportation end.
And it is a long way. I went the back way from where you go through Embarrass, and you go, it's very, very rural back there, obviously, but there's young children in the homes that need to be, you know, getting to preschool and improving their skills, getting ready for school. Members, any other questions? I see that Representative Biskins is back. We're just going to say one last comment is, you know, ideally we would take the grant program, the big bill, and have enough funds in there, Representative Biskins, where all the school districts could compete and get significant grants for early childhood. I've had a number of people approach me and ask about early childhood programs in sort of declining enrollment type schools, places that have space, and if they should be moving them to those. And so there's people all of us here kind of are trying to figure out how to do this and how to do it well. We will look forward to considering your project. As you know, it's going to be pretty tough here. When the governor came out with about a $700 million bill, I'm hoping, Representative Rukovina, we come in over $1 billion maybe, something like that. And yeah, at least. So we hope to come in higher. We think that, as you mentioned, building facilities like yours are good for our youngest citizens as well as providing jobs in our communities. So very important bill and project in many ways.
Can I make one more comment, Madam Chair?
Yep.
Our building, we are at Virginia right now. We are not experiencing a decline in enrollment as of today. Our younger ages are growing, as a matter of fact. Our building at Parkview is full. We are at capacity. There is no more space. We have developed everyday all-day kindergarten. So we went from, we have six kindergarten classrooms. Should be plenty back when they built it because it was alternate day. That's enough for 12 kindergarten sections. Right now we're at six sections. We have 130 kids. Our class sizes are right where they need to be in the low 20s. But we have no more space. If we do have an increase in student population, we're kind of stuck. Mm-hmm. And there's no way at this point we could even consider bringing another program into the building. So that's why the facility, our plan is in place to start now, but we can't really go anywhere until we get that facility. So that's, we are full, and enrollment is stable and climbing. So I just wanted to make
good. No, thanks. Thanks. Excellent point. Representative Rukovina, any concluding comments?
Chair, I was just waiting for Representative Biskins to make the motion to move this up to number one.
If not, I want to thank the committee very much for giving me the amount of time to my constituents. Came about 3 hours if they drove.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't get a ticket. Well, thank you for being here, and we look forward to hearing more about your bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next, we're going to switch where Representative Rosenthal, the Vice Chair of the Committee, is going to come up and chair the committee, and we're going to hear the overall bill. And Representative Rosenthal, we saw you recently out in Bloomington. Had a committee meeting in your district, which I thought went just excellent. I think it was it snowy that night or cold? Or, no, it was both. Snowy and cold. So we had a great turnout.
Horrible.
You want to tell us a little bit about the meeting, though? How did it...
Well, I thought it went really well. It was well attended by the community, and we got to listen to some programs in Bloomington and Edina that are doing a pretty amazing job in trying to close the achievement gap. And, you know, it was just the community is very happy to be able to show what they have and very happy to tell us what they see is working and what can they improve on.
Yep.
And, you know, I was very proud of them, and I thank the committee for coming out in those treacherous, bitter cold, and not a very friendly evening, but it went well.
Yeah, you did an excellent job. The community was just showed us the innovation that they have, and we had good bipartisan support. We had some senators there, and the staff. We appreciate everything they did to pull that together and those types of circumstances. So with
I really want to apologize. I have to say I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get to ask Representative Rucavina what his favorite game was as a child.
Oh, that's what we do the first time they come to our committee. That's right, not treats. Well, now it's too late. We'll have to do that on the floor maybe.
Welcome, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to present. See if I can just a second to get my settled here. House file 2458. Mr. Chair, do you have an amendment?
Would you like to move the amendment? Talk about it. Sorry. I'm a little rusty. Would you like to talk about the amendment?
Yes. Basically, Mr. Chair, this is a one-line amendment. It's H2458A2, line 1.25 is the addition. Number three, projects that will improve the quality of early childhood programs. We have an emphasis for trying to work on improving the quality members, and so it's a competitive process that these grants go through. And if there's the projects that will be involved with improving the quality, we think should be, you know, ranked on that and be part of the process.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Fiskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Slawick, as I look at on the amendment, I look at the first part of Subdivision 2, which talks about what the commissioner must give priority to, and I look at items 1, 2, and 3. They all seem to be items where you can clearly demonstrate that, yes, this is happening, or no, this is not happening. As I come down to Part B, where the commissioner may give priority, we currently have two criteria here. One talks about collaboration. Again, it's something you can actually demonstrate whether or not there's collaboration. Number two talks about the increase in wages. Again, you can clearly demonstrate that. My concern with this amendment is in adding number three, projects that will improve the quality of early childhood programs. seems to me to be much more speculative at the front end than any of these others. So I don't know. I would imagine that anybody who comes with a program, Madam Chair, is going to say, fund this because it improves the quality of what we're doing here. So I'm not sure how, and maybe the advocates who brought this language can tell us how this will be judged as we move forward.
Representative Slavik?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, actually this is driven by us, so we have been working on quality as a big initiative in the legislature, especially the Early Childhood Caucus, which Representative Peterson co-chairs. The idea of, you know, child care is early education, and how do you make sure that children have those quality experiences? And by that, how do you define quality? Part of what the legislature is working on is a quality rating system where you have the 1 through 4 stars. That would be one way to define quality. If it's a say in the competition you have a 1-star program versus a 4-star program, that would be a way to do it. There's ratios and guidelines that also, the quality of the curriculum they're using. There's a number of quality measures. This program is administered by DHS, which also works with the quality rating system and has money that is dedicated for quality as part of their federal money. So it is actually a common measure in early childhood programs. I know it does seem a little more difficult to define. We would work, I think the DHS person is here, right? We would work with, obviously, you are the ones that they're in the audience that put the proposals out and are sorting through them and deciding who gets them. Is we would work with them on how to define that. The idea is, you know, with little kids, you can be in front of the TV all day, you can be learning your ABCs all day, but there's different measures of quality that are there that the state has an interest in funding programs that are going to truly help kids move forward and have some kind of quality factor. So we're trying to use this more in early childhood and get it known. Just sort of like, you know, in K-12, it might be remember the movement back to the 3 R's and reading, writing, and arithmetic. I think in our area, it's quality that is the measure we're looking for.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, and I understand that, although I don't ever think we statutorily implemented the words 3 R's, and that's my interest. You know, as the word sits here right now, you know, I understand it is more leaving an impression, right? Unless we are talking specifically about quality as defined by DHS, then I think we should write that in there. Is the vision to give DHS rulemaking authority to define quality? Is this a placeholder for a time when potentially QRS does become the law of the state of Minnesota? So, it doesn't do any harm to the language. I'm just kind of curious about what this might portend in Madam Chair's mind.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I think you hit it on the head. It is for, we have a statewide framework we would like for quality rating programs, and we would like to, you know, again, for a project to get state funding, have a threshold of what that means. And it means, as you said, a number of things that are outlined here on the amendment, but also that quality would be included. I think your point is well taken. I think we'd like to think about, I'd like to talk with DHS about what might be more, if there's a more acceptable way to put this, or, you know, there's also all kinds of, you can say quality according to the IGDs or these, you know, there's these thresh indicators, but I'm not sure those are almost so rigorous, you know, you would potentially be screening out programs. So we do, your point's well taken that we should probably think about how to better define that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It is screening out programs, as every one of these criteria do. Okay, is to say, you know, here is a standard for getting state dollars that we are going to set, and you reach that standard, or but leaving it too nebulous,
yeah,
right, means that everyone, even what the state might not consider to be quality, is going to come and make the case why theirs should be quality, and then I don't think this serves us well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, because we're not in session and in an official hearing, do we actually move the amendment? No.
Okay. I don't think so.
So that's long. Mr. Chair, I'd like to talk about the bill. I have four testifiers, Mr. Chair, and committee members that are here with us today. Just a minute. I find a list, and we met before this, so we've talk together. We will have first Eric Haugie from Ready for K, then Steve Nagley from, is it the West Central? Yes.
Yep.
Community Action Agency. Then we'll have Sue Harris from Wanawan County Community Education. And then we'll have Judy Covert, who's the director of ECFE Special Education for the Faribault Public Schools. So you can see, we have primarily rural testifiers that have come a long way, Mr. Chair, so we very much appreciate them being here. A little background on this program, members, is the last 2 years the legislature has passed the state early childhood facilities grant program. The way this is structured, it's a little different than bonding, such as you heard from Representative Rukavina, and a typical type committee that you all sit on, in that this provides grants to facilities for infrastructure of early childhood, whether it's rehabbing a preschool so the environment's more conducive to learning, or building a shared community center where ECFE classes meet alongside joint Head Start classes. It's very important because a lot of these programs have no other way to get funding, so this is the primary way for them to get it. It had happened many, many years in a row, and then made it into the recommendations, but when you take that difference between the governor's bill and the House and Senate bill, got cut out and vetoed during that process. Well, we're going to start with Eric Haugie, who's going to tell us more about the program requirements. And members, if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer those as well.
Thanks, Representative Slawick. My name is Eric Haugie. I'm with Ready for K. We are pleased to support House File 2458, which seeks $1 million for Early Childhood Facility Grant Program. I want to thank the committee and the legislature for their past support of this funding, and note, too, that we are supportive of the project moving forward in Virginia as well that you heard about before. As Representative Slawick mentioned, while the funding comes from capital bonds, the grant program acts more like a typical state grant program. Cities, counties, and school districts apply to Department of Human Services for the funding. Private child care providers and Head Start programs would need to partner with the political subdivision to receive the funding. The grant program builds on and encourages collaboration and partnerships that we often see at the local level, like you saw in Virginia, we see in Grand Rapids, et cetera, by giving priority to projects that involve collaboration of the programs. Priority is also given to areas of the state with the highest percentage of children living in poverty. These are the children we know benefit the most from high-quality early childhood settings. Grants for an individual facility must not exceed $300,000 for each program that is housed in the facility, up to a maximum of $750,000 for a facility that houses three programs or more. As was mentioned, state appropriations must be matched on a 50% basis with non-state funds. Often the local contribution exceeds this by quite a bit. So a little bit of history. The grant program was created in the early 90s, in 1992, I believe. And since its inception, these bonds have financed grants for early childhood facilities totaling more than $15 million to over 60 sites statewide. In 2002, the entire bonding bill was vetoed, which included the funds for facility for early childhood facilities. In 05 and 06, the program received $500,000 each year, and as Representative Slawick noted, the last 2 years it has been line item vetoed. In the last funding cycle, the department received 50 inquiries about the funding and nearly $2 million in requests for 7 projects, and of these, 3 projects were awarded funding. We know that when the resources are in short supply, many of the programs feel it's not even worth applying for the funds. In 05 and 06, I know they had the department had trouble getting folks to apply for the $500,000. Ready for K conducted a recent survey of our partners around the state, showing that there are at least a dozen projects scattered around the state with projects that could utilize this funding. You have a sample of these projects in your pack, and I'd be happy to provide more information about any of them as well. A couple of them are here to talk about their programs as well. In closing, I think it's critical that the state take this opportunity to invest in early childhood through facility rehab and construction. These facilities help create jobs and meet the growing demand for high-quality early learning experiences. Thanks for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have a sheet from Ready for K with a list of all the shovel-ready projects. Did you just select some of those? Why did we get this sheet with all of these? Are these all being presented, or did you select some out of here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, we did Ready for K did a survey to the Initiative Foundation communities and some of our partners around the state asking if they had projects that are ready to go and to describe those, and these are some of the ones that we got back. It's certainly not a complete list. I know there's more out there, but these are the ones that responded.
And did they then submit applications, or these just a list of those that might submit if they had opportunity?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, that's correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slowick.
Representative Peterson, just to say about your question, I mean, if there's a, you know, sometimes there's a perception if there's a line item veto, there isn't a need. And I think what Ready for K has done here is shown us there's a need for this program. I think the line item veto is more about politics than about need. And there's definitely, you know, a good need here. And this outlines the types of things that our state could be doing and funding in early childhood. So, good. We'll have our next testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Nagel, and I'm with West Central Minnesota Community Action. We're located in Elbow Lake in Grant County. And I'm here to talk about 4 projects that over the years that I was involved with, and 4 different funding cycles, were in the city of Monaga, Purim, Parker's Prairie, and the last one in Browns Valley, which was the project was completed in 2000. The Monaga project was in 1992. All 4 of these projects were located in communities where the Head Start program was unable to find space that they could get licensed to have a Head Start center. 3 of the towns are under 1,000 in population. Purim is roughly 2,000 people. But the last project, and I passed around some photographs of that project, was in Browns Valley, which was in the 1999 cycle and completed in 2000. Browns Valley is located in Traverse County, which is the smallest county in the state population-wise, and it's also the oldest county, has the highest average age, and rather tough shape. And when we sought this funding, we were located in an old storefront in Browns Valley that really had intermittent heating. It just broke down all the time, and really had a pretty severe rodent problem. And we did not think that we could maintain our Head Start Center there because of licensing problems. What made a very, very big difference, all 4 of these grants were $100,000 or less, and we raised, in Browns Valley, it was right around $100,000, and we raised an additional $80,000 to do this. But it was the first new building in downtown Browns Valley in perhaps 75 years. And it permanently houses the food shelf And Social Services has a has an office there where it serves as a liaison to the Sisseton-Wahpeton band. And Public Health also has an office within the building. We also share it with the school, Alcoholics for Anonymous, Legal Services, Rural Minnesota SEP, all use the center. And it was a headquarters hub of activities during the two floods in Browns Valley in the last 10 years. So it made a real big difference. And the other thing that happened in the course of this project was that the Sisseton-Wahpeton Band contributed $30,000 to it. It was the first time that the Sisseton-Wahpeton Band contributed to a project in Minnesota, and I believe it was the first time they contributed to a non-native project. So it was really a very cooperative effort, and it continues to be so. And the other thing I'd like to mention is, you know, when you do a bonding project, it helps in so many different ways. In this, it, you know, certainly directly impacts the young children, young poor children, but it also made a just a wide variety of public services available in the community. Anything that it just happened in recent months, I work for a community action agency, and we many of our organizations manage the weatherization program. And as you may know, that the weatherization program tripled or quadrupled as a result of stimulus money, and we were in the process where we needed to hire three additional auditors to go in and inspect homes before and after the work is done. Now, what happened when we did this is that we received over 100 applications, and this is in Elbow Lake in Grant County. The last time we did that, 5-6 years ago, we got 5 or 6 applications. Virtually all these applicants were really very well qualified. They were builders. They were working for contractors. So it was kind of gave us an indication of how bad things were in the building trades. And so really just want to thank the committee for your time, and I want you to know that this program has made a big difference in 4 communities that I was directly involved with. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Member. Are there any questions? Just want to say thank you for coming all this way, and your programs sound amazing and really vital to your communities, and you can be applauded for that. We hope that we will be able to do similar stuff throughout the state.
Thank you. I have 2 more testifiers, Mr. Chair, that are going to come forward. Sue Harris, who's the director of the Wanawan County Community Education, and we have done a hearing about a year ago. And we also went to Faribault maybe even before that, 2 years ago. So it's always wonderful for the committee to get out in these communities. I remember in St. James and in Wanawan, very diverse community, changing community, very interesting and excellent early ed programs. So glad you're here.
Thank you, and thank you to you and all of you for your work on behalf of young children. It means a lot that we are supported legislatively by people who care for our littlest kids. So thank you for your work and your dedication to that. And also thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about this very important topic. And I think the people that testified earlier really said it all, is that you can't go anywhere without the facility.
I will. Could you just state your name for the
committee? Oh, yes. I'm Sue Harris from St. James, Minnesota in Watonwan County.
Thank you.
Southern Minnesota. And in our small rural communities, there's a will, but oftentimes the ability is just not there to follow through. And to reframe our community is that we are now at about a 50% Hispanic population in our elementary schools, and we're a small community of under 4,000 people, and we're the county seat. Our whole entire county population is 11,000 people. So we're very small, rural, and our leading industry is meat processing, which is then in southern, the southwestern part of our state, we have a lot of declining population. In our county, we've held steady because of our immigrant population. But thereby lies some of the economic development issues that we struggle with in these issues. Is one is we've had, in small rural communities, our only large resource is our school. We don't have early childhood space downtown that works. We don't have other facility space, so we look to the school. And in my county, we have three schools, and two of them run child care programs, and the third is underwritten by the Catholic Church. These three communities would not be able to have child care centers if they weren't underwritten the facility space by a larger entity. By virtue of the fact that child care has to balance on your income of fees and then paying a living wage to your staff. And when you have people that are working for $7 or $8 an hour, $2 an hour for child care with more than one child, paying taxes and buying food and everything else, doesn't compute out very well. When we have a large immigrant population, and in our community we've had, as Worthington INS come down, we have many children that we need to serve, and some of them are actually undocumented. So we have the ability and the need to try to serve these folks, and yet don't have the infrastructure and the availability to create that infrastructure correctly. And within that, these three points of this small rural community struggle, and I think all of our children across the state deserve good facilities rather than rat-infested sixth-grade classrooms with bathrooms down the hall and not a sink to change diapers and do food with. They need to be renovated. They need to be updated, not just for the needs of the elementary students that they were built for 40, 50, 60, or 90 or 100 years ago. We actually are dealing with facilities in our community that are 1929 and the newest is 1960. None of them were built with the needs of our earliest children, our youngest children. So needing to renovate them to make them correct, knowing they're oftentimes the only facility space available, and then the low-income need of our community. We have had 6 failed bonds, and nearly every one of those bonds has had early childhood facilities a part of it, and yet not able to get that through considering the low-income state and then the turn of our economy. How do we have the ability to serve our youngest children? We can't expand our child care. It's an economic development issue in our community. Our largest industry was looked at a planned expansion and dealt with our EDA. One of the first largest issues that they dealt with is what's the child care situation? If we expand, are there places for our kids? So we instituted an economic development cohort that worked together between the school and the community and researched the issue. Our best bang for our dollar was working for with our school and housing this within the school, and we already have a child care, but we don't have the facility space to expand. We're also looking at feeling like preschool needs to maybe be more than 2 days a week. If that would become law, we can't expand because we have no facility space. We are currently renting space outside of our school building, and our schools are needing to try to take care of their infrastructure issues to be able to meet the dwindling tax dollars that schools are now getting from the state. Facility space, serving sixth grade, how do you deal with all of this? So this piece could really help to pull that logjam out and be able to move some things forward for our youngest children. And then the other piece that I think is really important is the quality in the fact that we have a family literacy program because of the high need of the immigrant population. We have early childhood family education program. We have school readiness and preschool, and we have child care. And because those facilities are all intertwined and our staff are intertwined, we connect with each other. Our child care is better quality because we are walking alongside of all of the rest of the programs. We do teacher training together. We staff together. We share students together. And so by virtue of having quality, having the quality programs, and as they said before, the more we can pull these programs together, the better and leaner and meaner we are as far as working together. So I think as it relates to my community, my concern is for small rural poverty communities, how we meet the needs of our youngest children and the economic development issues that we need to have to maintain our sustainability and the quality nature of being able to pull these things together. And again, we can't go anywhere if we don't have appropriate facilities. The will to do quality programs is there. But when you bump up against if you don't have the appropriate facility space, then that means that some of our children will never be able to have the quality that some of the children take for granted. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there any questions from the committee? Thank you for your testimony. And it sounds like you're very, very well you're very passionate about it, and you understand the great need and the economic development that these investments will make. And I think we agree with you. I do, at least.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Just state your name and name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Judy Colbert, and I coordinate all the early childhood programs for the Faribault Public School. We have a building called McKinley Early Childhood Center that is a former elementary one-section building, meaning there was one classroom of kindergarten through grade six at one time in that facility. Prior to locating in that building in 2001, we were in a converted shopping mall space that was rented space. We used the levy to lease feature from the legislature through the school district, and we're housed together with Head Start, Adult Basic Education, our Early Childhood Family Education Program. The workforce center is located in that facility, and we had the beginnings of a very strong one-stop shop concept for our early childhood programming in the community. We outgrew that space. The district decided to build a new elementary school and wanted to consolidate all the children K through 6 into the newer, larger district buildings, and so this elementary school became available, and it seemed the prudent move for the district to get away from leased space and put us into that center. However, we had to leave our partner Head Start behind at that juncture, and they are continuing to rent space in that converted shopping mall that has no windows. There is no green space. They have a small park or a small playground that's in the middle of the parking lot with, you know, the chip kind of mulch underneath the swings and things. And every year they have to, you know, source that out because there's no drainage there, so it molds. There's a lot of concerns there in that location, as well as the dollars that they spend on rental space. So in the last 4 or 5 years, we've been working together trying to come up with a plan for expanding our facility at McKinley to make the building big enough so that Head Start could once again join us. With our changing demographics in Faribault, Faribault is a larger community of about 24,000 people. We have a large immigrant population. We have the third highest Somali population in the state behind Minneapolis and Rochester, as well as the large Hispanic population. About 49% of our school population is immigrant population, as well as poverty. I'm sorry, I have that wrong. 49% is our free and reduced lunch level, and about 30% of the children in the district are minority populations. And so when I'm in the facility at McKinley in the summer by myself, and a Somali family who speaks very little English comes to the door and wants to sign up for a preschool program, if I'm not able to provide that service in our building, or the family is low income so that they would qualify for Head Start, I need to try to explain to them without being able to speak the language that they need to go all the way across town and find another, yet another facility to meet the needs of their child if there's openings there. So it would really be, these grants would help us all to be able to provide the kinds of facilities that would increase, as Sue said, and as every other speaker here today has reiterated, the need for early childhood facilities is crucial to the school readiness and development of our youngest children. So I would just echo the words that you've already heard and know that we stand ready with a plan. We haven't yet been able to access the funding because of the reasons that Representative Slavik has explained to us, that these monies just keep disappearing before us. And so we hope that we can pull out of the economic situations that we're in and in the future be able to access these funds. We too have an early childhood initiative process going on in our community, and we have the partners. They're ready. One of the things we haven't had even the opportunity to try is wraparound childcare, and we really need that kind of all the words that you've heard so far are situations with transportation, and you know, we just struggle every day trying to make sure all the kids are able to participate in the programs and that we meet the needs of the families and provide the kind of service that these children deserve. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from the committee? I just want to say, you know, we all know the need is tremendous and the resources are very slim. This is a modest bill at best, and we hope that we can pass it and get it signed by the governor. So thank you all for coming a long way to share your story, and Representative Slavik.
Mr. Chair, thank you. A few last words. Thank you all again for being here. And as Mr. Chair noted, I mean, it is clearly needed and a very important program. I think our job at this time is to, you know, get to the governor and let him know how important this is, and to understand what this does for the early childhood kids. You know, it's interesting hearing about your communities, hearing about, you know, families that don't speak English and families that are coming in high poverty. And, you know, we think we want to close the achievement gap in this state, and then we're not funding programs that will directly help families and help their kids start school ready. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And we have to have places and programs where kids can go and their families can come and learn, and that's the what you all have done a great testimony to. So I appreciate you being here, Mr. Chair. I only hope we can move this forward and make it into the House bill. We understand the Senate bill is just a little bit bigger. It's about, we're asking for $1 million and they're asking for about $5 million. We figure since it's Senator Clark's last session, she'll make that happen. So she better. Well, you know, the senators, she'll think she could make it happen. And it would be nice if maybe on both ends we can pull it together and make sure this is in the bill.
Absolutely. Thank you. With that, I think many of the early childhood committees adjourned.